Welcome to True Vine Talks. Today we have our guest who also works with us at True Vine, Miss Hannah Eastman.
Yay!
All
Hey
right.
guys. Yeah. Do we do a quick introduction? Is
Yeah.
Hannah is okay with you?
Totally.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just tell us a little bit about how you got into counseling, who you enjoy working with as far as clients go.
Yeah, so I was a teacher for a long time. I taught middle school, and one of the things I saw in the classroom was just that we had a lot of mental health needs in our students, and I just did not feel equipped to handle them at that point in my career as a teacher. And so I decided to go into counseling and become a school counselor. So I got my degree in that and was an elementary school counselor for a little while, and I really enjoyed that work. And then made the transition to doing True Vine. And I still love working with kiddos and teenagers. And so I see kiddos starting around age 5 and then all the way up. And I really enjoy that work and just trying to meet those kids' needs and be a positive person in their life.
Oh, I love that. So, like, as a teacher, you saw this need in mental health and decided to do something about it. And so here you are, working full time for Truvine, providing therapy services.
Yeah, it's been such a gift to kind of feel it come full circle of not knowing how to meet that need and feeling really out of my depths, and now being able to, be there with parents who are experiencing those things in their children, and teachers, and just be able to come alongside them and provide some guidance. Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. I'm really grateful to do that work.
We're grateful to have you, Miss Hannah.
We are.
Oh, thank
Yeah.
you.
And so, one of the many needs that I think all of us have noticed in today's youth, teens, and young adults is this severe lack of distress tolerance. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's podcast.
So if we define what distress means, distress is it's having the ability to experience some uncomfortability. Like imagine that you get squished into a bus that you have to go to a place with a bunch of people, and you may not have much room, or in an airplane, and you've got to kind of manage your physicality to adjust to the squishness, the uncomfortable kind of claustrophobic feeling, because the outcome is you're going to a beautiful island with waterfalls and oceans. But to get there, you have to feel uncomfortable. And distress tolerance is the ability to be able to be uncomfortable for a better outcome or something you enjoy. And the eustress, which we also, Rachel and I did a podcast on, eustress is good stress, the kind that you just wake up and look at the sunshine and you feel good inside, or you did a good act towards someone and you feel good. Good feelings happen, eustress, which, that can be there too, but distress is something that all of us as practitioners are noticing that our youth are struggling with, and like to kind of tackle that today. Is that kind of how you all define distress tolerance?
Absolutely. Yeah, distress would be like any uncomfortable emotion, right? An emotion that makes you uncomfortable. It could be worry, anxiety, overwhelm, just stress in general, right? You're distressed. You're feeling uncomfortable about something. And then tolerance is like your ability to tolerate that discomfort. Can you manage it? Can you allow yourself to feel it without freaking out and becoming, overwhelmed to the point that you cannot function.
Yeah.
You continue to function in stress. That is distress tolerance. There we go.
Perfect. Well said, Rachel. Yeah, like you're in the bus, you're squished, everybody's squished and it's uncomfortable and you feel hot and you feel kind of sick to your stomach and you're anxious because people are touching you. You might get sick, but you're like, man, I got to get to my destination. It's a beautiful island, but you're willing to feel uncomfortable, willing to feel uncomfortable as a human in your in that space. And what's kind of happened for folks, you all think that where that's not something, there's a will not a willingness to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Hannah?
Yeah, just thinking about your question, what's causing people to not be able to, as you guys are talking, the word kind of endurance was coming up, like being able to endure these hard
That's a good one.
moments, right? Being able to endure it. And so what's keeping youth, specifically young adults, from being able to endure these hard things and know that there's likely, like your beautiful illustration, Linda, there's likely a positive outcome on the other end if they endure, right? And so just thinking about that, I think part of it is they just haven't had to, right? They haven't had those experiences where they've had to endure hard things. They've been given an opportunity to not have to lean into the hard moment. And so now they don't know how to endure it and how to move through it. It's becoming really debilitating to them.
I think everyone's heard the term helicopter parent, or there's a newer term called the snowplow parent that, I guess, like, the idea is they kind of, like, if any obstacle or challenge arises, any opportunity for failure, they kind of like race ahead and like smooth, right? Like blaze the trail, smooth it out for their child so that they never have to experience failure. And that can be really damaging.
Yeah, I saw
It
that
does.
so much in the school
You saw that in
system.
school, I bet, all the time.
Yeah, the snowplow parent. I've not heard that term, but I love it because, yeah, that was just constantly coming up as parents who just would not even give their child the opportunity to fail. Or if their child did fail, would come in and blame someone else and want the child's failure to be taken
Erased.
back, like, yeah, erased. And so they're not allowing their child to sit in that hard feeling and they're not
Or
helping
learn
them
from
manage
it.
that hard.
Yeah.
They're just
That's so
teaching
true.
them when hard things happen, we just try to erase it. We try to not allow it to happen rather than sitting with it and learn from it and grow in that. Yeah. So damaging.
It's good to be uncomfortable. It's good to be uncomfortable. And Rachel and I talked about this therapy. It's Stephen Hayes, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. And it's a great distress tolerance type of therapy. It's like you want to avoid the journey to get to the destination. And parenting, bull, going through, do you call it snow plowing?
Yeah, snowplow parent.
Right. So if your kid is here developmentally, they're age 3, and you want them to learn how to interact with their world and their environment, but you went ahead of them and smoothed every roadblock, every construction site that gives them a detour, and you went ahead and made it smooth. Well, what happens to their brain? So he would
Yeah,
say,
this I'm thinking about that right now. It's like No wonder they're all so stressed and overwhelmed, because if I learn my entire childhood that failure must be avoided at all costs, that sets such a high expectation, truly.
It's an unreasonable expectation. It's not
Completely
realistic.
unreasonable.
Yeah, if you listen to Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player ever lived in my mind, he said it came with many fails. 14,000, some, he named a number in one of his reels. I think it's accurate, but he missed 14,000 baskets in basketball. Yeah. And his high school coach told him, you just might as well, kind of give up. But he didn't make the varsity team, but he kept at it and he persevered. He did the hard things. He got up early, ran, played with the ball. He did it. And it's pushing through and being uncomfortable with being uncomfortable. You're going to miss sometimes. Yeah, let your kids miss.
Yes, keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
You didn't interrupt
Okay.
at all. They so in the Stephen Hayes therapy, ACT is like work, go through the pain, stop trying to avoid pain. Avoidance creates more distress than going through.
Pain is a universal human experience. We cannot avoid it. We cannot avoid it. And to try to avoid it is to deny our human, like just our innate humanness. Truly. I'm
And that's
thinking
what
about
Rachel,
all the things that like failure helps us develop as humans, right? I think it's like character development. I think it helps us develop empathy and compassion for others and resilience and like this a sense of agency that Hannah talked about in a previous meeting we had this morning. Like so many important life skills and characteristics, I think, come from experiencing and overcoming failure.
And I'm just thinking about how anxiety shows up in so many of our children and youth and young adults, right? And a lot of the times when you kind of track that anxiety, a big part of it is the unknown, right? That's where a lot of anxiety comes from, is I don't know what will happen if. I don't know what will happen when. And so if we're not letting kids experience failure, then as they grow, there's this huge anxiety around it because they don't know what happens when they fail. They don't know that it can be okay. They don't know that, man, I can fail and I can have a hard moment and this can be really, really upsetting and sad and all of these things. But then I can get back up and I can try again. Like you were talking about, Linda, with Michael Jordan, right? They don't have that sense of, if I fail, I know that I can get back up. And so there's just anxiety around it. I don't know what will happen if I fail.
There's no self-trust because there's no distress tolerance.
Self-trust. There it is.
If
Self-trust.
I can't guarantee that the outcome is positive, I will not be able to handle the emotional turmoil of a negative outcome.
I know some people that can run will refuse to do a 5K because they can't win. I'm like, come on, let's just do it. I'm just like, I'm gonna do it even with this asthma. I'm gonna do it anyway. Because guess what? I don't care if it take me 2 hours. At least I did it. I
I'll
don't
be
care
the
if I
last
fail.
person across the finish line. The walkers could beat me, and like, that's okay.
Yeah, just do
I
it
did it.
anyway. So that's perseverance. Like, hey, you should try out for that cheer team or that basketball team. You may not make it. That's okay. You can work at it and try another team. It's okay if you get rejected in that moment. Get up and try again. Try something new. Maybe that's not your talent. Not like what Rachel said, bulldoze over. Only do things that you feel safe and comfortable that you're going to succeed and win. What does that do to your psyche? To your brain, it tells you what you can't learn or do new hard things. There's no Neurowiring, is that the right word, Rachel? Like neuro.
Yeah. Creating
Yeah.
new neural pathways through new
Thank you.
experiences. Absolutely
Hard
right.
stuff. Hard stuff.
Yeah. And in
Yeah.
this constant avoidance of distress, right? Like just tr they're trying to self-regulate, but their coping strategy is just to avoid anything that might cause distress whatsoever. And in doing that, they're strengthening that desire to avoid. Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
reinforcing it.
Yeah, which is what you're talking about with those neural connections. Like they're strengthening the connections that say, like, just don't, just
Don't.
avoid, just
Yeah.
distract.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there
Distracting.
isn't self-trust. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Did
Yeah.
you?
Sorry, Rachel. I didn't mean to
That's okay.
cut
We
you
do that
off.
on Zoom because there's a slight
Yeah.
lag.
Rachel and I interrupt each other all the time. You're
Yeah, go
good.
on, Hannah.
Yeah, I just, yeah, as you both are talking, I'm just thinking, I love that word you use, self-trust, or that phrase. And I
Yeah.
think that connects to that idea of agency, right? Like you're not creating those neural pathways that give any sense of self-trust or any sense of agency. So you don't feel like you're confident in managing those hard moments because you don't trust yourself. You don't have any agency. You don't have the sense of I can accomplish this. I can move beyond this. I can sit in this and tolerate this. Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't keep the parent that keeps the training wheels on the bicycle when you're teaching your child to ride the bike. If I never take those training wheels off, Grant's not learning balance and how to hold steady, keep it moving. But if I'm always there bulldozing all the obstacles out of his way, and I've been guilty of doing it, I've done it before, and I'm probably do it again, Charlie puts me back in my place, but I'm like, I want to make it smooth. No, he needs to bump, have a fall, and get back up and learn how to ride again. Riding a bike is a
Yeah.
good distress tolerance for kids too.
It's a good analogy. Yeah.
I don't know where these are coming from. It must be the
Yeah,
Thanks,
you're full of
God.
great analogies today, Linda.
It's another prednisone kicking in for my asthma.
Woo. Oh,
Yeah,
that's
I was just
hilarious.
thinking though, a parent who wants to do that, like you're talking about, Linda, it comes out of such a good place
Such a
normally,
good
right?
place.
Like you just so want to protect your child. Like I'm thinking about my little boy. Like I wouldn't want to see him crash and burn on his bike and be all skinned
Right.
up and cry. Like that hurts my heart. But I know that that's what he needs to experience in order to know I can crash, I can have that hard moment, and I can get back up and keep going. And that's so hard. It's so hard as a parent.
Yeah. That's what it takes to develop self-trust, confidence in yourself,
Yeah, that's a new
willpower,
willpower.
self-discipline. Those are
Yeah.
huge. And that's what's lacking because in the event, which is inevitable, we're all going to experience distress regularly, right? So in the event that their avoidance tactics have not worked, and they do experience distress, instead of like staying with it and being determined and could just keep going, they pull back, they get on their phone, they play a video game, like they revert to that distraction. And we know that
Yeah.
if you're not processing an emotion, it's not going anywhere. So they all have
Right.
this buildup of unprocessed stress.
That's true.
No wonder they feel overwhelmed all the time. It's clicking. It's all coming together for me as we have this conversation.
Yeah, because they're
Yeah.
just numbing out. They're using those things to just numb out.
Yeah.
I feel like the numbing out and the avoidance tactics and strategies or a disassociation from reality. So after I've done all the hard things in the day, and maybe it was hard just to take a shower. And that's sometimes true for
And
me
it
when
is for a
I
lot of people.
sometimes when I haven't you all too probably sometimes when you've been up all night with your baby, it's hard to get up and wash your hair. It
Yeah.
just is.
Just
And
feels like a chore. Yeah.
you're so by the end of the day, if you want to disassociate, distract, and numb, that's okay. It's decompression time. But you've done a lot of hard things. Like not doing anything
Right.
hard, it's, you've got to don't numb yourself from the beginning of the day. You're here on earth for a purpose. And numbing out and avoidance strategies won't make you feel fulfilled and it'll cause depression. Don't you all think it does?
100%,
Depression.
no doubt about it.
And what
It
is
does.
depression, Rachel? What would you define as depression?
I would define it as like a state of like intense sadness, right? To where it's like this like debilitating on the like right? Like people isolate, they don't want to socialize, becomes incredibly difficult to take care of themselves. They feel terrible about themselves. The view of self is incredibly negative. They feel guilty for things that they don't need to feel guilty about. What would you add to that, Hannah?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I was actually thinking of what Linda was saying and that idea of numbing out and I like there's something that I've kind of been thinking of recently. I've listened or read something that made me think of this is the difference between like numbing out and a distraction. And how like whenever you're distracting yourself, sometimes the emotion is too hard. And so you distract yourself. And then when you're numbing out, that's when you're just trying to avoid it, right? So maybe if you're distracting yourself, I can't tolerate this right now. I need a break and then I'll come back and process it. Whereas numbing out is, I just need to completely avoid this. I'm not going to process it. I'm not going to circle back. I just don't want to experience the distress.
Good point. Very good point. Love that.
Yeah.
Numbing out versus distracting. Yep. That's good.
I think a lot of the youth, like we're talking about, and maybe their intention is to distract, but they end up numbing out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. I could totally unintentionally do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Start watching a bunch of
Well,
movies.
yeah.
Yeah. Hannah?
Yeah, just think like the social media algorithms are trained to get them to numb out, right? Like that's what they're created to do. They're not created to be a healthy break that helps
Right.
your nervous system regulate. They're created to pull you in and numb you out and kind of create more distress. But that's what a lot of youth are using as their distraction.
And then the problem that you just said so well, Hannah and Rachel's pointing to is, well, that stuff emotion, that stuff feeling, oh, I can't write this paper, I can't possibly join that club, or you're avoiding these things that would help you feel good, really good, create eustress stress and euphoria. So you avoid it. So you just numb out and then you stuff the emotions down. Like, I'm too anxious. I'm too scared to try anything new. I can't do it. And then you're left there alone. And what happens from an attachment perspective, because we're all attachment therapists, is if I'm alone and I'm just numbing, then I'm not getting my needs met. Mirror neuron exchanges with anyone. I'm just existing here in this matrix of algorithms.
Oh, human beings are not meant to live in isolation. We are not meant to. Yeah, it's devastating to our nervous system. It leads to depression. It makes it worse if you already have it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what are some, oh, sorry, go ahead, Miss
Go
Rachel.
ahead. I was just going to say, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about some complexity in the topic because the population that we're talking about is aware of mental health more than any other generation I think has ever been. Like they're so
Yes.
comfortable talking about mental health, their algorithms are mental health related. Like they are not afraid at all to say, I have anxiety, I have depression. Like,
Love
and yet, what we're mentioning here is like the self-awareness is there and they will own it. Like doing something about it is where they are kind of like getting stuck.
Yes,
That makes sense.
grateful. Yes, and that's from
That's
Stephen
really
Hayes'
good.
book. He said, when you're standing in quicksand, you're aware that you're in the quicksand, right? But rather than make any types of moves, because you're gonna just gonna go deeper in, and so that's interesting. Getting stuck there, yeah. Like, oh, I'm aware I'm in quicksand. What am I gonna do?
Right. Go ahead,
I would love
Hannah.
to hear your all's thoughts on this, but I totally see that, Rachel. Even when I was an elementary school counselor, I had these third and fourth graders who are coming in and telling me these diagnoses they have, and I have anxiety, I have ADHD, and they're, explaining their behavior using these diagnoses, and I wonder if sometimes that becomes a crutch to them. I don't know. How do you guys see that?
Well, we don't pathologize diagnoses.
Right.
Like in Dr. Sue Johnson always taught us that we do not pathologize human experience and behaviors. So I don't want people to get too don't get too wedded to a diagnoses. More or less, what am I experiencing? And what can I do? What moves can I make to change that experience versus staying in the diagnosis pool there?
And for our listeners that maybe don't know that terminology, pathologizing is kind of like relying on a diagnosis to explain someone's behavior, whereas as attachment focused therapists, emotionally focused therapists, we use the human experience, right? Like, what have you experienced? What have you been through? And like, we use that to explain their behavior more
Correct.
than diagnosis.
Yes, very good. Thank you for explaining that, Rachel. So don't get wedded to a diagnosis, because we just what is the change behaviors that you can engage in that will build up your distress tolerance so that you can feel less anxious and experience joy, which is, I know as therapists, we love to see people have joy. And
I think maybe what I'm seeing is people getting caught in those diagnoses and not believing the change can happen because of it, because they are, being diagnosed one way or another, or they're engaging in this, language they're experiencing on social media.
Yeah, I
Do
never
you guys see
recommend.
that?
Yeah, I highly
Absolutely.
discourage people from looking up TikToks. We don't know if the people are licensed when they're talking about diagnoses and that kind of thing. You can have a clinician can diagnose you. You can't just diagnose yourself online like that.
There is a learned helplessness at times that I've seen where people do kind of get stuck in. There's no hope, there's nothing I can do. I'll always have this diagnosis, and that prevents me from doing X, Y, and Z. I think a lot of times the content that people are watching are like same aged peers type, people of the same generation talking about their own life experience. And they talk about like, oh, I have anxiety and these are all the things I'm afraid of, or oh, I have OCD and these are all of my obsessions and my compulsions. But they're not talking about this is what I've done to overcome it. This is what I do to manage it. That's what I mean about like getting stuck,
In the
right?
quicksand.
Like, the
Yeah,
more
there's
you
no.
talk about and take in the symptoms or behaviors, right? And not talk about how do I manage this, right? How do I overcome this? The more stuck you're going to get in the just the pool of pathology diagnosis.
Yeah, that's really good, Rachel. I like that word stuck that you're using.
So if we did like even did a role play even right now about what that would look like, I think that might be helpful. What do you all think? Like someone playing the role of the kid here, like, hey, I don't want to do A, B, C, D, if we did do it, but you just like, well, what are some things you've tried? What are some, did you go to school and did you say hello to someone that you have not talked to before? And, how will we teach these skills of distress tolerance, for betterment of their overall mental health? How would you guys do it as clinicians?
I think that people need habits, healthy habits, small, boring, normal, everyday habits. I wake up at the same time every day. I go to bed at the same time every day. Right? I eat breakfast, I eat lunch, I eat dinner, right? I brush my teeth. Like, just daily routine provides some sort of structure. And it's a known, right? It takes away part of the unknown.
I think it builds that self-trust you were talking about too, Rachel. I can get up at this time. I can do these things every day. I can trust myself to do them. I can be faithful to them.
And you guys know I love exercise, and I think going to a gym or going outside and going for a walk for free, I mean, the studies show it. If you can make yourself walk a mile, the amount of serotonin and dopamine release in your body, that's what triggers motivation. Doing makes you do more. Look at
Yes, thank you. Preach, yell it from the rooftops, please.
The more I do, the more I want to do, because dopamine is the motivation drug that gets released in my gut. Doctor, one of our professionals came on and did it in the podcast. She said it comes from the gut. So if I don't do the movement in the gut doesn't happen, I don't produce any dopamine. So going for that 1 mile hike, 1 mile walk, that's, hey, if it's a block, if it's even a block, you're going to produce motivation in your gut.
Yes, motivation is not something that just happens. You could, if you are sitting on your couch for 7 days straight, waiting for motivation to strike, it ain't striking. Like,
It
it's
ain't
you
striking.
gonna be waiting. You gonna be waiting.
Believe you me.
I'm gonna be waiting.
Yeah.
And I
And you
think as
felt it because you've done something. You woke up at a good time and brushed your teeth or ate breakfast or whatever. Yeah, go on, Hannah.
I was just thinking, when we're talking about how we work with clients and children and young adults and building these skills, just helping them find that one thing that they can do, right? That one thing that maybe feels hard but manageable, right? In that moment, like going for a 1 mile walk. Look at you. You did You did that? You walked for a whole mile? Oh my goodness, that was
Yay!
so amazing. That was so hard for you and you did it. You know, and just and creating that inner talk too of hyping yourself up a little bit, right? Like, we
Yeah.
did that.
Encouragement.
We
Yeah. Gotta
did that.
celebrate. Yeah. The internal celebration to encourage yourself. Absolutely. I think a lot of this is our youth has grown up in a society with immediate gratification. People do not know how to play the long game anymore. Like, I do this small thing today so that 10 years from now, I don't have cavities, right? I brush my teeth so I don't have cavities and, like, my teeth rot, right? Like,
Yeah, unless
And
your
I
genetics don't work in your favor.
True, which
That
happens. Well, I'm just making up
happens.
just random, whatever's coming to mind,
It's a good
examples.
analogy.
Yeah. But yeah,
Yeah,
people
like
are like,
running
if I
the
go ahead.
Yeah, just running the marathon sounds impossible. And it
Right.
might be right now or really, 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 really hard, right? But you could walk a mile and get started. What can you
Yeah.
do? Scaffold it down. Writing that whole paper might feel really, really, really hard. But what can you do? Can you do some research? Can you write an
Yes.
outline? Can you read the book? Can you read just a chapter? You know,
Yeah. People
finding
are
that.
not good at breaking things down into smaller, more manageable pieces. You're so right, Hannah. Yeah. If the expectation was for me to wake up tomorrow and live a completely different life where I like only eat clean, organic, whole foods, nothing processed. I work out for an hour a day every day. I do all the, that's not possible. I'm not gonna sustain that.
And I
But
think too, what you're go
go
ahead,
ahead.
Rachel.
Sorry.
I
It's
was just thinking, you know, what you were saying about social media too, like the instant gratification, right? We're used to seeing that instant gratification, and we're also used to seeing the amazing things people are doing, right? The best of everyone's lives and these amazing accomplishments and comparing ourselves to the whole world. Oh, well, this person ran a marathon, but that doesn't, but I might see all of that on Instagram and all these marathons that they're running, but I don't see the training they had to do for years to get there, you
There you
know?
go,
So,
Hannah. That's right. It takes time. I did the half marathon. That took weeks of training. 1 week, the first 2 weeks, you would run 5 miles. The next time you'd run 10. I mean, it was a constant. These people are roughing it, you know. It's distress tolerance. Running is a good form of distress tolerance. Just what we're kind of advocating here as providers, like make yourself do manageable, hard things in small tidbits daily. Builds resilience and self-agency.
Yes. Prove to yourself that you can do it instead of just believing that you can't. You cannot trust every thought that crosses your mind, and you can't control every thought that crosses your mind either.
Yeah. So good. You guys came up with a wonderful topic. Yeah. So what do we want to let our listeners know if maybe they or their children or their teen or someone they know or love and care about, what do we want to let them know about building those distress tolerance skills before we head out?
Yeah, I guess just if you or a loved one has a desire to feel more resilient, to be able to tolerate stress more, right? Increase your autonomy, self-discipline, reach out to Truevine and see one of our lovely counselors, and we'll be happy to guide you through that journey.
Yeah.
Yes. Hannah has openings. Kaylin and Caitlin are still seeing new people, and they're
Great.
great with youth. And I think, Rachel, you're still booked, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So we're excited for you all to, maybe take some of our ideas and implement them in your life or in your children's life. And if you do find yourself being a helicopter mom or a bulldoze mom, and I've been guilty. I'm just being honest. I've been guilty of
I'm
doing
sure I'll
that.
be guilty too. I'm sure
Yeah.
that's hard to manage. Yeah.
I'm very soft and I want to make everything puffy and perfect and heavenly, but heaven's not here. So we're on earth and it's hard. So we want to encourage you to allow your kid to fail in safe and safe situations, of course.
And helping kids find those, I love what you said, like manageable, small, hard things. If your kid is feeling overwhelmed and stuck, help them break something down, identify a small, hard thing they can do and help them experience that.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, take care.
Bye.
Bye.